Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. Hi, I'm Irene Watson, Managing Editor of Reader Views in Austin, Texas.
And I'm Victor Volkman from Loving Healing Press in Ann Arbor, Michigan. You can hear our show every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Tonight's topic is Getting Reviews with the Big Five, and our special guest who will be joining us this hour is Derek Armstrong of Kunati Books. You can learn more about our guest on the Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. Now, starting next week, our podcast will be heard on a new radio station located at authorsview.com. Please check our website for updates. As I mentioned, tonight we're talking with Derek Armstrong, the publisher at Kunati Books, an international publisher of controversial, provocative, and bold titles. He is also the author of The Game, a thriller novel launching this spring to stunning reviews and major buzz, including front-of-store position in the major chains. He previously authored The Persona Principle with Simon & Schuster and co-author ComYU, a best-selling book on image marketing. Derek loves the provocative, controversial, and unique. Derek Armstrong writes thrillers because, according to him, they're entertaining and you can be ridiculous and serious at the same time. Among his many accomplishments, he has won awards for advertising, and he is also the founder of Canada's Best Ad Agency, according to the Toronto Star. Persona Corporation has written the book on image marketing. Now, Derek is going to share with us secrets of getting those all-important top five reviews. In fact, since March of last year, Kunati has managed to obtain major reviews from all five of the trade magazines. Now, I'm extremely jealous here because since March of 2006, I haven't gotten any, so I'm really excited about our guest. Good evening to you, Derek.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
So what can you tell us about what a publisher should be thinking of as they're getting ready to put the finishing touches on their advanced reading copy? I assume that's where we start.
Yes. I think it's putting everything in the context of marketing. I have to assume that anyone going out for reviews from the Big Five have a good, solid product that they'd be proud to send out. So I wouldn't give any tips on content or the books themselves. But it's really putting the image on the book, putting the marketing spin on the book, and positioning the book that becomes really critical. There's a lot of competition, as you know. If you sent out your book, what you said, last March and didn't get any reviews, well, that's probably more a reflection of just the serious competition for attention, the tens of thousands of books they receive and the few they can actually cover. So the real big tip that I can share is really what I call the Hollywood logline. We've done a lot of work in the past with Hollywood studios and several book publishers such as Simon & Schuster, and we've really learned to distill the book down to what we call a log line, which is just a single sentence that positions the book in a unique way. And that seems to be the big secret. That's the way to get the attention of the Big Five. And by the Big Five, I mean Publishers Weekly, Kirkus Review, Library Journal, Booklist, Forward. There's others as well, of course. Now, we are launching 8 books this spring, 7 fiction, 1 is a memoir, and fiction is notoriously difficult to garner reviews on. Nonfiction is certainly a lot easier. It's easier to put a spin on nonfiction as well. So really it comes down to taking that book and making it unique in one sentence or less. The elevator pitch is another way of putting it.
Okay, I can imagine that goes, you know, front and center on all the marketing materials. Give us an idea what goes out along with the book physically itself when you're, you know, packing it up and sending it off to Kirkus.
Well, image is everything. I know it's a cliche, but it really is. And the image starts, of course, with the title and the book cover. So I certainly, even though they are reading galleys when you deal with advanced reviewers, there's no doubt that the cover itself is going to have a lot of impact. So I suggest strongly that a solid finished cover be developed first.
Okay, great.
That log line. Sorry?
That sounds really good because there's this school of thought that goes with the white cover as well.
Yes, and what we typically do is we show our finished cover on our press sheets in our package, and we do put on a proof-style cover to align with that school of thought of don't send a finished book to an advanced reviewer. They tend, particularly Kirkus and Publishers Weekly, tend to assume that they're already published and therefore they pass on them. So we show our finished covers on our press sheets in our press releases, which go with our books. We normally enclose our catalog. If you have one, that's a good thing to do. And that will show the cover as well. Then we typically put our cover on our paperback galleys, but we emblazon it with the type uncorrected proof in very large type across the nice graphic, which also discourages sales on eBay, which we found was an issue with our galleys. Quite a few of our galleys were finding their way from reviewers to eBay, so that discourages that a little bit. Then I typically would advocate right on the cover using that log line in strong type, that one-sentence positioning log line. They're really critical. They have very little time to review your book, in the context of deciding whether they're going to review your book, and that positioning line is really what makes or breaks it for them.
Derek, I would like you to talk a little bit more about the log line. You're saying that it's one or two words or a sentence, and just explain that to me. Is this more like the a subtitle, or what is actually a log line?
It's a Hollywood term. In advertising, we would call it, and that's my background, 18 years as an ad agency principal, so we would call that our slogan in an ad, that one sentence that makes your product unique. In Hollywood, they would call it your pitch or your log line, and in business often it's called just an elevator pitch. And really, the assumption is you've got a few seconds to get a producer, in this case a reviewer's attention. There are 10,000 other books screaming for their attention. So that log line, even if it's ridiculously exciting and maybe over the top, is at least the thing that's going to grab their attention. You don't want to go too far over the top. So a log line would not be a 1960 hip mystery. It would have to be much more than that, because that's not going to get anyone's attention. One of our books was a 60s mystery called Shadow of Innocence. So rather than a 60s mystery, we position it as the oh-so-cool crime-solving McCarthy family of detectives delve into the dark and perverse shadows of an ultra-conservative. You know, you have to position it and make it a little bit exciting, but all in one sentence, basically.
Basically the hook.
The hook,
The hook.
And then we use that typically on our book flaps, synopsis, website, everywhere. It becomes the lead line in everything put out there.
Mm-hmm. So, but basically, is this also put on the book cover, on the galley cover or the advanced review copy?
Yes, in our catalog it becomes the bold type across the top on the website as well. On the book flap it becomes the first paragraph of the synopsis that you might say, and then we lead into the more detailed synopsis. Using typical pyramid structure, start with what's important, what's big, and then gradually talk to the details if you've still got their attention. It's also a PR principle in that respect. So my own novel, The Game, it's about reality TV, a mystery on the set of a reality TV show, and you would think that would be enough, but it's really not to say it's a mystery that is set on a reality TV background, even though that's a bit unique. So it became a darkly humorous thriller. A reality TV becomes too real when a killer with a message preys on the contestants of America's number one television show. Something to get it a little bit more emotional and exciting.
Well, it certainly, when I look at your titles again, it confuses me. But when I start reading your log line, it's like, wow, this really hooks me. It really does. So I really do understand what you are saying.
Yeah, and that's the key thing. And you'll find that the log line typically will be picked up in some way or shape or form by the reviewer themselves. They may not quote it, but you can feel the language feeding into the review a bit. They get it a little bit in terms of what we were trying to convey and what the author was trying to convey. And it also helps a bit in the marketing, in the sense that you yourself really know what your book is about and who your unique audience is. And that's critical to the thing as well. For instance, Bang Bang is one of our books, and it's a really beautifully, beautifully written novel, and it's going to win a lot of awards, and it's already gotten our best reviews. But basically, it's kind of an anti-gun tirade. But if you position it as that, it's just not going to, well, it'll sell to anti-gun people. But we positioned it instead as a wickedly funny novel about a singing vigilante waitress crime victim who takes on America's obsession with guns and transforms herself in the process. Much more engaging.
And it's sensational, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's important.
Mm-hmm. Very important. So you also mentioned earlier when you started talking about image marketing. Let's go into image marketing. And would you explain to our audience what, in your terms, image marketing is?
Mm-hmm. It's our broader broad term defining the bigger picture in terms of brand. We don't use the word brand for authors so much, so we coined the phrase image marketing. It's quite a lot about image. So it becomes important for the authors and the books to take on their own persona. We call it a persona. Personality. And once you have defined a personality for an author, you do everything you can to reinforce that. Whether that be, a good example would be one of our authors, T.K. Kenyon. She's a brilliant author, and she takes on both religion and science in her book. So we've positioned her as a PhD scientist, which she is, who takes on both religion and science in a controversial way, and that's sure to engage or enrage readers. So now she has to support that persona in pretty well all the activities, all the book reading, the book signings and things that she'll be doing, radio interviews, that sort of thing. So
Derek, I'm wondering, for nonfiction, I'm still wondering, with the log line, would you play into the background of the author, or would you talk strictly about the subject of the book, or how would I approach it for nonfiction?
I can only coach without knowing exactly what the book is about. I would say you have to look for what's unique. If the unique factor is the author's credentials, for instance, then that has to be part of the log line, an important part. But if the author is writing a nonfiction book on a subject that hasn't been covered before or that's uniquely positioned, then clearly that becomes the log line rather than the author's credentials. And sometimes a mix of both.
Uh-huh.
But you always want to search for what's unique and who target it specifically at one audience. The mistake a lot of publishers make, I think, personally, or authors for that matter, is trying to target too broadly to capture too many people. And by diluting it that much, your message becomes too bland, and reviewers don't become interested. Perhaps readers don't become interested because there's no clear message. It's better to
Derek, I have to agree with you. There's always a strong temptation to say, everyone should read my book. Well,
yes.
Actually, no.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. I mean, even with our publishing company, we're new. Been around for only since March of last year. Mind you, we have a fair bit of marketing experience from having done Simon & Schuster for so many years, so on. But basically, we positioned ourselves in a very unique way, and that cut through the clutter for a lot of people. We positioned as controversial and bold, and that dictates the books we take on, the authors we take on, and our marketing.
Right. Derek, what kind of follow-up do you do after the books go out during that critical phase leading up to publication?
In the context of reviews or just in general?
Yeah, say for reviews, for example.
Okay. Well, I try... I don't advocate the big follow-up, perhaps because I haven't yet had to do it. I do follow up to see if they've received, but because we send FedEx, we know they've received or not from the receipt.
Sure.
I don't think reviewers are overwhelmingly receptive to the follow-up call from either an author or a publisher. They're either interested in what they saw and the book itself or not. And if it's not, nothing you can say will change their mind, really, at that point. Probably at that by that point, it's found its way to eBay anyway, your galleon. But if they are planning on reviewing it, the only follow-up I do is just to find out if indeed they received it and then when I could expect to see a review, and they will tell you that much, and then you know. But I don't actually sell. I don't pitch the book. Usually our kits are sufficient for that.
All
and
right,
so far, we've gotten the coverage.
Yeah. Share with us a little bit more about what goes into your kit. I'm really curious on that.
Okay, well, we don't have, let's put it this way, we image market the author and the book rather than Conati. So although we have a brand book for Conati, our kits are individualized. So we look at the book, we build that log line, and then we'll build an image around that, and it usually falls out of the book cover. So for example, I'm using a lot of examples, Tournament of Champions is a hilarious spoof on the Masters tournament. pardon me. It's by Todd Sentell. He's a hilarious golf writer. He's widely writing as a columnist in various magazines, and he's really hilarious. So we knew what the positioning was. The graphics were funny. The kit we put together was hilarious. Everything had to be funny. But then when you flip it around to, say, Whale Song by Cheryl Tardif, that's a tragedy, a coming-of-age tragedy with a lesson. It had to be emotional and magnificent in imagery. And so every book has its own image that falls right out of that log line. So it really goes back to that. In our case, we do an awful lot of interactive. So we were one of the early developers of the novel trailer. In fact, we have a trademark on that. So we do an animated novel trailer for each of our books and enclose a disc with the books, which I believe they're actually looking at. And, of course, we FedEx everything. I think it's really important to courier. I don't mail anything. It's part of the image. It has to come by FedEx or choose your courier, but overnight courier. And with proper pages set up on your website ready for them to look at, because you can count on the reviewers actually going to your website, so make sure that's built before you send out the kits. The most important thing, though, is timing. I think most people send out too late. They do have a cutoff, so if they see that your release is 3 to 4 months away, it's right on the line of whether they're going to do it or not do it, and if they're busy, they're not going to do it. So really, we target 5 to 6 months out, which is difficult, but you just have to do it. And then we package in a very slick manner, as I said, very customized to the book. And most important, tell them your marketing plan. We always put a one-page marketing plan in there with samples of the ads we plan on running and the budget that we plan to use. Nothing is really hidden. And lastly, make sure you reinforce that there's distribution. These big five typically won't, well, with the exception of Forward Magazine, sort of focuses a little more on smaller publishers, most of them won't cover you if you don't have distribution. So whether that's through wholesale or a distributor or through your own efforts, you somehow have to validate that so they know that there's going to be books in the channels. And I think what they look for, and this is only something I've heard, is something like 20,000 books and up for press runs, which certainly is the range for a small publisher, you know, but 20,000 books per initial press run is usually what they look at, and major if you're targeting publishers with your book list.
You're talking about packaging being so important, and I so agree, being a review service ourselves, it's just amazing how unpackaged some of the books come in. And what we're finding also is that they're not reading our guidelines. So I would like you to talk a little bit about guidelines and how important it is for the authors or the submitter to actually read the guidelines.
It's critical, and the other mistake I think a lot of people make is they assume everyone has the same guidelines, which is not at all the case. There's no doubt that, you know, if they've asked for something specific, you really have to oblige, whether that be timing, you know, sending it that much ahead of the release date, or sending an advance galley versus book, certainly giving the information they've asked for. I can't imagine why anyone would want to go through the effort and expense of sending out 50 galleys, let's say, to advance reviewers, without taking the time to look at those 50 viewers and find out what exactly they were looking for. One thing I did find is that the guidelines aren't so different from reviewer to reviewer, but they are slightly different. So it's really a way of showing that you really did pay attention if you actually read it and follow their guidelines.
Yeah, I so agree. Now, let's talk about the timing. It used to be at one time that it was 3 months prior to, and now it seems to be that it's being extended 5-6 months. Right now, we are getting galleys for review that are going to be published in September. So there certainly are publishers out there that are respecting that time period, and yet there are others that will send the galley 3 weeks before publication date. And so I want you to talk about timing and the importance of it.
Yeah, there's really two factors there, in my opinion. And this didn't come from my own experience. I did quite a lot of research on this from, you know, the various gurus in publishing. And essentially, there are really two quiet times for the big five anyway. I don't know if I'm giving away one of my deep secrets, though, by telling you that. Anyway, basically, if you're sending it out 3 to 4 months ahead of the typical pub dates, which is April and September, you're hitting a big logjam of galleys. And if you're wise, the target range would really be 2 months ahead of that. Essentially, that gets you in the range of after the previous season's quieted down a little bit and before the heated-up advanced galley season, the next coming. Unfortunately, it's not always possible because publishers and authors are struggling to make their last minutes. And I think that's another big mistake. Reviewers aren't looking for finished books. They're looking for uncorrected galleys. They can see past line breaks and typos. It's more important to get it in their hands on time, even though I said packaging the most important thing. That's a slight contradiction there, but I don't mind sending out galleys that are not fully edited and corrected yet.
Well, that's known in the industry that galleys are still requiring some editing, proofing, whatever needs to be done. So, but I understand what you're saying is the other packaging, your sell sheet, your press release, everything else that goes with it should be 100% right on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and really customized.
Exactly.
Not just customized for the reviewer, that's part of it, but also customized for that particular book. I work with a lot of small publishers on the ad agency side, and what a lot of them do is they have their own kit folders and templates for press releases. That's not a way to stand out, just throwing it on a press release template for that particular publisher with a standard synopsis of author biography and a synopsis of your marketing plan. That's just not going to really do it. You really want to have a designer get involved and have that designer, perhaps the designer who did the book cover, and have that designer, as part of his or her job, design a custom kit for the review, which reflects the whole image of the book. And the writing of the synopsis reflect that as well.
Now, we're talking about the big five. What about magazines? Do they also require 3 to 4 months pre-pub date to get the review copies?
You're referring to the consumers?
The yes.
Consumer reviews?
Sure.
Not really. Actually, what I've been doing is, here's our master plan. We've taken the trade review, and we sent them out early enough that we got great snips for the covers. So we didn't actually print any books until we had at least 3 quotes each book minimum. And then we went to press, which means we're coming off press fairly late in the season, and we're only sending them out at that point to consumer reviewers as finished books. But now the covers have the reviews, the trade reviews on them, which makes them a little more compelling and a little more, I have to pay attention to this. So I don't think it's an advanced situation. The 3 months doesn't matter. You have to be within the range of the launch, certainly, but I don't think you have to be 3 or 4 months ahead. In fact, so far, the people I've talked to have not been that receptive to being that much in it. They want to know they're in the stores.
What about for themed books, let's say something that's revolving around Easter or Mother's Day or Christmas?
Yes, you definitely have to work a time time flow backwards from the launch. You know, the only one I have that's like that would be Tournament of Champion because of the Masters.
Mm-hmm.
So we worked it backwards from April the, I forget when the Masters exactly, but I think it's April the 4th, something like that. So we worked everything backwards from that day, including all the book signings and all the readings that Todd will be doing and so on. Working with our distributor, making sure all the bookstores would have the books on time for the Masters and all of that. For the reviews, we had to work everything backwards from that date as well. So for his book, we were giving an even greater lead time. And I would do the same with anything, any book at all that's time sensitive, because if you miss that time horizon, you've wasted an awful lot of effort.
Exactly. So what about...
I think the other problem would be the big seasons like Christmas or Passover or anything like that, where there are going to be a lot of books, thematic books. There's also going to be a lot of competition for those reviews as well. So that rationale of still sending it out 2 or 3 months earlier than everyone else for that season is still sound for that purpose as well.
Mm-hmm. So really what I'm hearing you say is it's really important to do your footwork prior to publication. Really get those books out there to the reviewers 3 to 4 to 5 months in advance. Give them the opportunity to review it so that when actually publication date comes and the big launch, you have all these, your books are reviewed. This is what I'm really hearing you saying. So what about getting reviews for advanced sales? How important is that?
I think it's major. Our distributor kind enough to say that, well, of all their publishers, and they have about 200, I think, in the range of 200 publishers, we're probably the only one that had this kind of sheer volume of reviews, and it's showing in the advanced sales and things like the front-of-store promotions that they're doing on the game and that sort of thing. We probably wouldn't have had any of that happening if we didn't have those advanced reviews. And then there's even a bit of buzz around the fact that all of our books had the major reviews as opposed to your 4 of them, because that creates a little buzz in channel. I don't think a consumer cares, but the channel certainly pays attention. So we really had to go all out on the review aspect, I think, big. If I was going to spend money anywhere, it would always be in this area.
And I'd like to remind people that you're listening to Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. Tonight's topic is getting reviews with the Big Five, and our special guest this hour is Derek Armstrong. Coming soon, our podcast will be heard on a new radio station, authorsview.com. Please check our website for updates. Derek, I'm thinking, is there a second tier beyond the Big Five? Do the newspapers still have any role, like New York Times, LA Times, Washington Post? And what time frames would you use for those guys?
They do have a big role, and the best way to approach them is with the traders, so they really do pay attention to those. I'm not as qualified to talk to that right now because we're in the midst of doing that, and I've certainly got my fingers and toes crossed on that. But we are getting good response from the fact that we've had so many trade reviews, so I think it's really important to have those. But the timeline we've been working to is really, even though our launch is officially April, we're really working towards summer titles, so our books are now in the hands of the newspaper reviewers. The problem with newspaper reviewers is they don't review that many books. They do more extensive, detailed reviews. They get just as many books as Publishers Weekly, but probably review, I would guess, 1% of the number of titles that publishers can manage. So you really need a bit of, probably a little bit of buzz going to get the attention of something like the New York Times or the LA Times or any of those. And that would probably come from the trade. And
right, so
sales.
Trade reviews first, newspaper second.
Right, yeah, absolutely. As a test, I did send out, at the exact same time we sent out for trade review, we sent out uncorrected galleys, even though the wisdom is not to do that, to the New York Times, the LA Times, and so on. We didn't get an awful lot of response, to be honest. But now, I've resent them, we're getting a lot more interest. With finished books, with the trade reviews on the cover, it's making a difference. So I would say that's really got to be the order from my own experience so far.
That makes sense. I've heard of some people having success regionally and then sort of breaking out of that to become a national title. Do you have any experience with, you know, starting regionally and working out from there?
Yes. Well, Tournament of Champions started that way because very Atlanta heavy. I mean, we become a big hit in the Georgia area because of the Masters and because Todd is from there and it's golf capital of the world and all of those things. But it's taken off nationally in advance sales. That's all I can go by at the moment because it hasn't really. But advance sales are very strong. And Whale Song is a Canadian author, and we certainly focused heavily in Canada. But it's really south of the border that it's really taken off in advance sales. Our numbers are better than 10 times the Canadian numbers in the U.S. So the little buzz we created in Canada got south of the border, so to speak. The game, I'll stop talking about that because it's going to sound self-serving. Mothering Mother is a memoir, a brilliant memoir by Carol O'Dell, whose mother passed away of Alzheimer's, and that whole experience, that tragic, but the way she's written it, somewhat humorous adventure that she had as she cared for her mother. She focused her efforts almost exclusively around where she lives, which is Florida and the South, and it's just gone mad across the country in terms of event sales, probably because of the topic. But we have only really marketed it in the South. So I think that the buzz just is self-propagating in that respect. You do a really good job focused. It's the same principle as positioning. Position on one audience, position on one idea, and in this case, if you have a narrow budget, position on one market, one area, where the author can perhaps do a tour, do some signings, and from there the buzz should spread outwards, hopefully with support of, of course, the publisher.
Derek, you had mentioned how important the design is, and I'd like to just have you talk a little bit more about the book design itself, and realizing that it is really very critical to have a very impressive, eye-catching cover, and otherwise the reviewers are just going to glaze right over it. Tell me what you feel is really important in the actual cover.
I think this is where... This is where, I know I'm hammering this a little heavily, but this is where the log line really, really helps. If you've taken the time with the author, or if you are the author, if you've taken the time with the publisher in that case, to identify your audience and what's really unique about your book, then the designer, whoever that is, whether it's an in-house publisher's designer or some freelancer they've hired, that designer can do a really wonderful job if they know exactly how it's positioned. If it's controversial, that'll come out in the design. If it's emotional or tragic, that'll come out in the design. But I can't overemphasize design. I suppose having done advertising for so many years, our big successes have always come from using only the best designers, and it's really short-sighted to do what a lot of people do. For instance, hire someone who's inexpensive or dabbling in software or just fresh out of school or something like that who doesn't have a track record yet. It's better to spend an extra $1,500, $2,000 and get a really solid cover design based on a really unique... That makes all the difference. Really good example of that is... our book, Rabid, it's won a lot of awards already, even though we haven't entered it in anything. And but what's really great about it is Barnes & Noble is putting it in their store windows in New York City and big cities like that just because of the cover. It isn't even based on the reviews. They just love the cover. So I actually had a phone call from them to do posters. And, you know, it's that important. If you have a cover that's that striking, they're going to be more interested in putting it face out or with a poster in the window, or when you do a book signing, they'll be more willing to put up the posters. So you really, if you only have the mindset to do two things, it's got to be that log line, that unique position, and the book cover. Those are critical. And the best designer you can afford, really.
That's some really good advice. What about the title of the book and the positioning of the title and how it blends or doesn't blend into the cover itself? Would you be able to give us a little advice on that?
Yeah. again, I'm going to sound repetitive, but
repetition is good.
They came out of that log line again. The authors always have good titles because that's as you can imagine, we're small, but we get thousands of missions. We had 3,500 from March to December of last year. I counted them, and we published 8. And there are no book covers to go by. It's really, and you don't necessarily have time to read every book submitted. So the title and their version of a log line or synopsis is what first grabs you. And so I would say all of our books had good titles before we tinkered with them. But with no exceptions, we changed every title that we got. I can't think of an exception. And, oh, pardon me, Tournament of Champions, we didn't change that title. But most of them we changed for marketing, because that's what it comes down to. So as soon as we've settled on that log line or that slogan, that one-liner, then the title starts to change. And again, that affects the design of the cover. The one mistake I did make was on my own book. I should never have called it The Game. There are too many books out there called The Game. My first instinct was The Dying Game. We wanted to make it shorter. That was a mistake. But if you're selling on Amazon, for instance, or Barnes & Noble, title is really important. Otherwise, they can't find your book. So if you search The Game, you're going to find 40 or 50 titles with The Game, which did me no favors. If you search The Secret Ever Keeps by Art Terrell, you hit it on the first search. It's a dead-on title that really grabs you, and it's unique. So title is really critical for online marketing and, of course, book covers.
Yes, I agree. And I've been also told that it's important that when you go to a bookstore and your book is in the bookstore, that you should be able to see the title very clearly from standing in the center of the aisle. It should not blend in. It should be right out there, and the same as the spine, that when you do a cursory glance down the shelves, your book needs to stand out, the title needs to stand out, the cover needs to stand out.
Yep, that's true. And that's where an experienced book designer versus an experienced graphic designer makes a big difference. There are many, many great graphic designers. I have a lot of friends who are in that industry. But you really want a good book designer for covers. That is a hard and fast rule. You have to be able to read the title from 6 feet away. So therefore, length is very important. The title Bang Bang that we have, that originally had a wonderful, poetic, lovely title, but it was about 9 words long, and it was an exceptionally good title, but there was no way we could make that work on the cover of the book, such that we could see it from feet away. So that is a hard and fast rule. In fact, our distributor's Independent Publishers Group, they have that sort of unwritten rule as well. They actually look at covers that publishers submit, and if the title's not big enough, they're going to send it right back. Same with the spine as well, because not every book is displayed, unfortunately, face out. Sad fact of life.
Exactly. I'm sitting here looking at some of the books that have been sent in for review, and I'm looking at one of them, and the title is so enmeshed into the picture that it's really confusing me. And so, of course, this is a book that probably will get bypassed because of that. And yet,
when it gets the retailers, yeah.
Yeah,
sorry.
Exactly. Exactly. So, gosh, Derek, unfortunately, we're just coming to a close. You've given us so many great tips, And is there anything that you have, just sort of as a last-minute, most important thing to tell our audience?
Well, if there's only 3 things that are important, I would say, if there's 3 things to remember, it's timing, log line, book cover. I mean, that's it. Those are the 3 biggies.
Timing, log line, and book cover.
Log liner, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely book cover. And I certainly invite, I know I'm plugging here, I certainly invite people to go to our website and have a look at those book covers. They're all by the same designer. They're just amazing book covers, and that's what's going to sell the book. And that's going to be true of anybody's book. The book design, the book cover is really, really critical. So those are the biggies, timing, log line, book cover. And these days I would add web marketing to that mix. We've spent an awful lot of time making sure that we get high traffic on our website, and it's paying off in advanced sales. So far we've had about 3 million unique visitors to our website since March of last year. And that was a very diligent effort on our part. It's all driven by content, but also by design. And having something to say there, and that's another whole topic. But web design, web content, very important as well.
Well, and, you know, what you're just really saying is defying sort of the old adage, if you can't judge a book by its cover, but in a sense, that's how the book is judged, is by its cover.
It definitely is, especially by retailers, and they're important, critical to hand sales, displays. It's important to distributors, it's important to reviewers, and ultimately it's important to some extent to buyers of books.
Exactly. You know, I can say myself that I can, if I want to go to a bookstore, I will scan the table or scan the shelves, and the books that really attract me are the ones with vibrant book covers, something that tells me what the book is immediately. I don't have to wonder what this book is about. It's that immediate impulse buying that really happens. And
that's right.
It's important that we...
They pick up your book, and then they start reading your flap, and then you
exactly.
hook to that extent, and then your synopsis hooks them to the next level, which is hopefully to read the first chapter. And this is all talking retail, but...
Right.
Same goes with reviewers. I'm sure when you get the books in for review at Authors Access, you're going to look at the book cover, you're going to read the synopsis, and if that doesn't, you're probably going to go on to the next one, just because of sheer numbers, I would guess.
You're close to guessing.
Well, Derek, in publishing anyway.
Thank you so much, and let's just tell our readers, or pardon me, our listeners, what your website is again.
It's www.kunati.com. That's K-U-N-A-T-I, K-U-N-A-T-I.com.
Great. And I know that there's a phone number there, too, and there's even a toll-free phone number, so if people want to phone and talk to you, is it okay if they do that?
Oh, absolutely.
Great, great. And I'm sure that you've got, I know that you have a really interesting website. Your covers are phenomenal. They're... I just really encourage the listeners to go to your website and take a look at the covers and possibly even get some ideas as to why the importance of the log lines, the positioning, and the importance of the book covers. And, of course, you've got great web marketing, too. Okay, Derek, thank you again very much, and we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us and giving us all these points and how we can actually get reviews from the big five, the ones that we're always attempting to get, and disappointed when we don't. So now we know why we don't.
I appreciate the time, Irene and Victor. Thank you.
And you've been listening to another podcast edition of Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. You can hear us every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. We'll be back on the air Thursday, March 22nd, 2007, when our topic will be Regional Writing Tips and Techniques, and our special guest will be joining us is Tyler Tickelar of MarquetteFiction.com. You can learn more about our guest on the Authors Access website, which is AuthorsAccess.com. Authors Access is a joint production of Reader Views Incorporated and Loving Healing Press.
And for Reader Views, this is Irene Watson of Austin, Texas, signing off.
For Loving Healing Press, this is Victor Volkman in Ann Arbor, Michigan, wishing you all a good evening.